The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
If you're a Disney Plus subscriber and you're watching The Mandalorian, Jack and I have a podcast for you.
Every week, we'll discuss the latest episode of The Mandalorian and talk about other great content and maybe some not so great content on Disney Plus as well.
As two lifelong Star Wars fans, we have a ton of fun geeking out over all the little details of the show, and we want you to join us every Monday.
So search for Disney Plus Reviews. That's Disney PLUS Reviews. Hey, Phil, how about that Baby Yoda? Baby Yoda says, what's a podcast?
Good morning. Good morning, Corey. How are you?
Terrific. How are you today?
I'm very, very pregnant.
Family Broadcasting Corporation, in association with the Studio DNA Podcast Network, presents What Else with Corey Mann, an interview podcast with your favorite artists. Here's your host, Corey Mann.
Rebecca St. James comes from a land down under. She began performing in the late 80s. In the 90s, she had gold records and a Grammy, selling somewhere in the ballpark of 2 million plus records. She's also an author with more than a dozen books and an actress as well. After a musical hiatus, Rebecca is back with a new song as we record this and a new album on the way in 2021. We talk upbringing, marriage, her siblings, and the movie Hot Rod.
My name is Rod. And I like to party.
But first, all right, we're going to play a quick little game, Rebecca, to kick things off, okay?
I love it. Yep, sounds good.
Mick Jagger from the Rolling Stones, Sandra Bullock, Kate Beckinsale, actor star Jason Statham, Kevin Spacey, Rebecca St. James. What do they have in common?
Oh, gosh. I have absolutely no idea. I thought you might be asking favorite actor and it would be Sandra Bullock, but I really don't know, Corey. You got me stumped.
July 26th.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. Sandra Bullock and I share the same birthday. That's so cool.
Which leads me into my next question.
Okay. Yeah, here we go.
What Sandra Bullock movie best sums up your life? Is it Woman Drives an Out of Control Speeding Bus? Woman Defies Gravity in Outer Space? Woman Adopts an African-American Teenager Who Becomes an NFL Player? Or Woman Fakes a Marriage to Become a U.S. Citizen?
Well, the answer would be none of the above, but you know, I am very, very legally a U.S. citizen now, as of not very long ago, like just a couple years ago. But I did not have to fake my marriage to achieve that. Let it be known. Oh, Corey, wow. This is impressive stuff.
Happy birthday here in just a couple of weeks.
Thank you. Yes.
Wait a minute. The math. When's the due date?
Baby comes probably 2.5 weeks after my birthday.
Okay.
Yeah, so okay. Very close. But you know what? At that point, he could come at any point. So maybe he will come on my birthday. That would be pretty amazing to share a birthday with our son.
Is that a podcast exclusive? I heard you say the word he.
Oh, I'm trying to think if we properly announced that. You know what? I don't know that we did.
Breaking news.
I think it might be. I think it might be a podcast, a Corey Mann podcast exclusive. Yes.
Do I dare ask?
That you found it here.
If names are being kicked around, do I dare ask?
They are being kicked around. They're definitely not being talked about.
Okay.
We kind of go for pretty unusual names. We have a Gemma and an Imogen. So definitely very unusual names. And I think the one and only time that we shared the name before it was like announced on their actual birthday, it was a cousin of ours. And I think he felt so much like pressure about his response that he actually giggled at the name, which is not what you're kind of going for when you talk about your firstborn's your first child's first name. Yeah. I don't think we will ever talk about the name before baby's born, but yes, names are being thrown around. And they are true to form, unusual, and different.
I would like to be totally egotistical right now and offer up this name. Here it comes.
Okay.
Scout.
Oh, that's an interesting name. That is unusual, and I like it.
What's your daughter's first name?
Our first daughter is Gemma, and our second daughter is Imogen.
Here's where that came from. In To Kill a Mockingbird, one of my favorite books, one of my favorite movies, the two kids in the movie are Jem and Scout.
Oh.
Even though it's Gemma, there's just a hint there.
Yeah.
Just a hint.
I see that, Corey.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. I'll talk to my husband about that. I'll say, Corey Mann gave us the name Scout, and I think that we need to, you know, throw it in the ring.
And he'll go, who?
No, you're kind of a legend in our family, Corey. I hope you know that. With my dad, with my brothers, you're quite the legend. So you have some clout.
Well, let's get into the weeds. First question, who told you you could sing?
I sang around the house all the time, and definitely, you know, probably had some affirmation from family or extended family. Definitely some encouragement there that there was some sort of a natural gifting. But I think the first person to really notice it was a music teacher at my school when I was 13. So I was going to a Christian school, and they had these rock band auditions for this Christian rock band. And I made it into the rock band, kind of younger than the other kids in the group. And so it was really that teacher, that music teacher, that first really believed in me with my voice. So I'm thankful to her.
Did you believe her? Is that why she sticks out the most? Did you actually go, all right?
I don't know. I don't know if I've ever been one to like kind of go, oh, I've got, it was funny. I was saying to somebody else just recently, I'm not, oh, you know what? It was in a podcast. So I'm doing also this podcast with Access More, K Loves New podcast platform. And my brother Joel was my podcast partner. And I said to him in that podcast that day, I know I'm not a singer, you know, like the one that can do the runs, like the Mariah Carey style or the Lauren Daigle style. I'm not that kind of singer. And he said, me too. I know that about myself. So I think we're more kind of the singer that likes to have vibe and tone and authenticity, and we can sing on pitch and things like that. But I don't know that Joel or I would ever like go, wow, we're truly great singers. You know, I'm happy with my voice, and I feel more proud of it at certain moments than others. But yeah, I don't think it's been anything at any point in my life where I'm like, whoa, I'm impressed with my vocal ability. I think both Joel and I are just a little realistic about what we bring to the table. And there's other things other than our voice that kind of round out what we offer as singers. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
So my youngest is 13, and I read.
Wow, Corey.
That, yeah.
Wow.
My oldest is 22 and married now. And as I look at my 13-year-old, and I was prepping for speaking with you, I read that you were in that ballpark age opening for Carmen in concert. And I can't even imagine my 13-year-old doing anything of that kind of magnitude. Who did you see on stage, on TV, and you went, I want to do that?
We grew up, my family, all of us kids grew up around music. So my first show, I was 6 weeks old, going to the Sydney Opera House, and I think it was a Larry Norman show that my dad was promoting there. And so it was literally, I've never not known like music or like not being around it. It's just a very natural part of my life. So I definitely remember there being early memories, probably 6, 7, 8 years old, of looking at artists that dad would tour. And he toured Amy Grant and Petra and, you know, White Heart, a lot of these bands and artists back in the day. And I remember like watching some of them. I mean, I would watch all of them as they came through Sydney, but some in particular, like the lights and the fog and the smoke up on the stage, it just looked so like interesting. And thinking, maybe God will call me to do that. You know, maybe I'll do that one day. But no, it was never like this consuming passion or I've got to be up there. It was just something that I kind of thought maybe God would call me to, and he did. Yeah. And now you're right. I look back at 13, that particular age of, you know, starting out on that tour, and realize how young I was. I think at the time I didn't think I was as young as I now know I was. And there was definitely a lot of, you know, feelings of insecurity. I remember just getting on my face before that first show in Perth, Australia, and just begging God to give me strength to go out. And he did, you know, and that was kind of and has been a through line throughout my whole ministry. I've known my inadequacies and know my need for God, which I think is a good thing.
You're from Australia, but there was, I'm wondering, a conversation about coming to America, a decision made. Do you remember that conversation? Do you remember that idea? Do you remember we are going to the West? What was that?
Yeah, I do. Because I was 13. It wasn't long after that tour, really, or around that tour, that my parents told us kids that, you know, we were going to America. We were all very, very excited because it was like, oh, we're going to the place that has Disneyland. We'll get to go to Disneyland. And the initial plan was for us to be there for 2 years. So I think, you know, it's now like 29 years later. We're still here, and I'm very happy about it. We love Australia, but we know we're called to be here, and we love the U.S. So, yeah, I was really excited to come.
How massive of a move was that for your family?
Massive, yeah, because we lived somewhat of a normal life before moving to the U.S. We went to school, you know, we're normal Aussie kids in a lot of ways. I mean, we were a Christian family, so that made us a little unusual because there's not a ton of believers in Australia. Yeah, and we went to, you know, Christian schools, but we just had a normal life, really. And then mom and dad pulled us out of school months before we came to the U.S. And we started homeschooling at that point and really began the adventure of a lifetime. So, yeah, it was pretty radical.
I want to talk about success for a moment. And I know who you sing for. I know who you sing for, but there was a level of success. When did you feel that, Rebecca, like, okay, we're on to something. Something is working. Something is happening.
I mean, my initial response hearing you ask the question is I don't know that I like ever really thought about it. It was just like thought about what I was doing or the impact too much. Like it was just kind of, you know, the next thing that was happening, whether it was a tour or an album or a book or, you know, or sometimes all three at once. But, you know, I probably just from other people's reaction, I knew something was connecting when I won a Grammy. So I was like 19 or 20 when that happened.
Did you go?
Yeah, I did actually. I had absolutely no idea that I was going to win anything. It was just, oh, wow, we've been nominated for a Grammy. Definitely should go to that. And I found this like vintage. I mean, it was not the cool vintage. It was like the, let's go to a shop in downtown Nashville that just has some different unusual clothes that are not super expensive. And so it was like velvet. I mean, it was just terrible. I look back at those pictures and I shudder.
Who is in the room or who is in the audience just for a time capsule kind of moment? Who was massive then?
I feel like Sting comes to mind, like that he was there. Like I feel like I did look out and see that there were people that were iconic. Yeah, I'm trying to think. Sting, maybe Seal. Like it was, it was pretty epic. But I literally didn't even have a speech prepared. I was just like trying to go, like while I'm walking up, because I was in the grandstands at the Staples Center, I think, in LA. And like while I'm walking up, I'm going, okay, I need to figure out something to say. Yeah, because I think Audio Adrenaline was the artist that I thought and probably everybody thought would win that year.
When you hit the road in America, literally in America, when you came here, it was a family affair, all hands on deck. I talked to your brother, Luke.
Well, the thing that people don't realize with Rebecca was, so she was like a second mother to all of us boys. And the way it goes in my family, there's seven kids in my family, lots of kids. And so it's my oldest sister, and she is the oldest. And then there's five boys, and then there's a younger sister. And so she was like a second mom. And so one of the things that was very difficult for all of us boys was she was the in-house babysitter as well. And so when mom and dad would go away, you know, on a date night or, you know, whatever it might be, she was left in charge. So they had developed this system where if you misbehaved, you got a tick against your name. And if you got three ticks against your name, that equaled to substantial discipline when mom and dad got home. Well, the problem was, is there was no one holding my sister accountable to this process. She could do whatever she wanted. And so when mom and dad would come home, we would have these arguments of like, hey, this wasn't fair. Beck did this. And Beck would be in the corner scowling at us. She would look at us like, you know, how dare you misbehave in my presence and all this stuff. So anyway, the kind of the second mother nature of Rebecca is something that most people don't think of. So, you know, if there's some questions that come from this for you, I hope I've teed you up well for this moment there, Corey.
Follow-up question, how many nights you personally had three tick nights? How many did you have?
I was pretty well behaved.
Really?
I actually kind of realized pretty, I'm the third youngest in the family, and I learned pretty early on in the process that the better behaved you were, the more things you got to do. And so I watched people like my older brother Joel getting a heck of a lot of trouble.
Would he be the worst behaved?
He's definitely found his way. Yeah, probably. Yeah, he found his way into more complications than I think all of the other. You know, we would do things. So it was my brother Ben and Joel and I. We were like a pack, kind of in the high school years. And somehow, you know, my brother Ben was 11th and 12th grade, and you know Joel was a few years behind him. And then I was in middle school, and they allowed me to tag along everywhere we went. And if we arrived home late, you know, because we had like a curfew, we had to be back by, you know, 9:30 or 10 each night or whatever it was. I don't exactly remember. And if we arrived home late, then obviously we got a talking to when we would come home. Well, my brother Ben was the driver. And when we would arrive home, oftentimes it was somehow Joel arguing with mom and dad as to why it wasn't fair with the curfew that they put in. And yet he was just a passenger along for the ride. I've never understood how he was the one who was get into trouble, but that was the way it went. So yeah, Joel found his way with a lot of ticks against his name and found a way getting in a decent amount of trouble in his life.
I love that. Was there some sort of chart, like a three tick chart? Which sibling was on the best behavior? Which sibling deserved the worst behavior? Let's see if they match. What would you say?
So yes, we did. Like I think it was more when mom and dad were gone, which wasn't very often. Tick against your name chart didn't come out very often on the fridge, but I think it was when they were away, it actually gave the authority figure, which was me, some kind of authority, because if they got three ticks against their name, I think that they got a spanking or they got disciplined when mom and dad got home. So, you know, Joel and Ben were probably the ones that would get into a bit more mischief. I mean, Daniel was kind of the oldest boy of the five, so he'd toe the line and kind of help me keep everyone else in line. But Ben and Joel, I think, would push boundaries. Luke was a pretty good kid. Luke and Josh, I think, were pretty good. So is that what you got from him?
Luke would say he was best behaved, Joel worst behaved.
Yeah, I think it's probably pretty right on.
I went into the archives here at work. We have a TV station here. It was a performance you did for our TV show. You know, little brother Joel is singing background vocals. And if I did the math correctly, it was like a 14 or 15-year-old Joel. And
sounds right.
The people behind the scenes here at work told me that everybody was here. The whole building was small bones. And your brothers are for King and Country. They went to the School of St. James. They learned the lighting and the sound and the singing. They obviously had a front row seat to what you did. Now that you're back into this, is there something you've seen in the boys from their successes that you are learning from now?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind, I mean, I'm super proud of them. They're just wonderful people, and I'm so thrilled to see them do so well and be entrusted with so much, because they're just both wonderful people and great husbands and committed to Jesus. And I'm just so proud of them. But I think the thing that comes to mind is their visual, like their live performance is so fantastic. And Joel is probably more wired that way, to kind of like orchestrate how things kind of look from the stage and that component of what they do, you know. And when he was singing background vocals for me too, he was very much about that as well, and would help with stage plotting and like kind of come up with the design that my brother Daniel, like lighting design, that, you know, that would how that would play out and what the stage would look like. So he was kind of always wired that way, but they've just like slayed that, you know. I mean, they just do such a great show musically and look wise. And so I feel like I'm doing worship. Like this album Dawn that's just coming out is a worship album. And so I want to make sure that everything visually that I present is like tied into people encountering Jesus in that way. But I also want to stretch that component because of what I've seen them do. Yeah. Like I definitely have watched that over these years of them being out on the road so much, and just seeing how powerful that is, you know, maxing out the visuals along with the music. And so I want to bring that to the table probably more than I used to now.
I called it the School of St. James. I now christen you Professor St. James. You are now Professor St. James.
Wow. I don't think anybody has ever, one said the School of St. James, but then definitely not put Professor and my name together. So thank you, Corey.
Well, you're the Dean of Cool. You have been doing this a long time. Let's say a Belmont down the street calls and says, hey, let's do a semester together. What three things would you want students to know before they left your class? And I'm talking about a 19-year-old Rebecca, 19 and 20-year-old Joel or Luke, sitting in your class with what you've experienced, what you've gone through. What three things do these students need to walk away with?
Pursue authenticity. Pursue in your work. Bring yourself to the table. It's going to be so much more powerful if you bring your story and your authentic journey to the table. I think there's a lot of fear. There can be, I think, when we're songwriting or, you know, singing from the heart or putting ourselves out there. But I think asking God to help us combat that in pressing through to where we can be vulnerable in our work, I think that that's really, really important, because if it's resonating with us on a vulnerable level and an authentic level, there's a high chance that somebody else is, it's going to ring really true with their hearts as well and connect with them. I think don't be scared to be unique and do things that are really different. I think my dad really encouraged me in that. I think there was like some things early on, even just with like performance, where we just took some risks and, you know, visually did things that were outside the box, even like performance moves that I would have, like when I was first starting to tour, or like sound wise, we took a lot of risks on my God album, my second album. And I think, not being afraid to be unique is really important. And then the third thing, just for longevity, that I would say that is extremely important, that I way learned the hard way, is put in margin, build in margin, build in rest. You know, don't just slog it on the road and say yes to everything. Say no where you need to. Listen to your internal red light, because you just don't want to burn out your resources. Just honor your own self, because God gives you those warning lights that you have to listen to for longevity. Thank you for asking. Good question.
I have never heard the story of how you've met your husband.
So I was living in LA at the time, but I lived in Nashville for 17 years and then moved to California for 10. And I was living in a part of LA, loved it. I was doing some acting at that time, really, really enjoyed my LA experience. But one of my roommates, who's a really strong believer, was a part of this philosophy group, which was run by a guy who was trying to impact young creatives in LA and lay a foundation for theology through philosophy. So there was like Christians that would come and non-Christians and just people with all kinds of different opinions and thoughts. And so I got invited to this philosophy event, met two guys there that, I don't know, there's something about them that just felt really special and different. And they ended up introducing me to my husband, Cubby, an event. He was working in TV at that time, and it was a wrap party for the TV show that he was doing. He was also starting to do music at that time and ended up being a part of a very successful band. But I met him like right when he was on the cusp of that musically. And I remember just like seeing him from across the room and our eyes meeting and it being like incredibly special. Like my song Wait For Me that I wrote for him way before knowing him, probably over 10 years before meeting him, there's a part that says waiting for the look in your eyes when we meet for the first time. And there was literally something special that I don't think I'd shared with anybody else ever when our eyes met for that first time. So yeah, we started dating pretty quick. And I think within a little over a year, we were married. And so now we're at 9 years, which is really amazing. I'm so thankful God brought me and Cubby to meet and then marry and now have 2.5, nearly 3 children. So I just feel very, very blessed to be living all those dreams that I longed for so long.
We've made it to the final question, Rebecca, you and I.
Okay.
August 3rd, 2007, Andy Samberg released a movie called Hot Rod. Are you familiar with this film?
I am, because my husband loves that movie. So I have seen it, yes, multiple times.
For those that haven't, it's the inspirational story of stuntman Rod Kimball, and he's trying to save his father. It's a cinematic masterpiece, Rebecca, as you already know. But there's a moment in the film where Rod is walking to the school buses. He's about to jump at a fundraiser. And the song You're the Voice by John
Farnham, yep,
is being played. It's an anthem of change and community and rebirth and then rioting, flat out rioting. I'm wondering, when you performed that song that you covered on your record in 1996, was there ever rioting at a Rebecca St. James concert?
Corey, somehow you've managed pretty much every single question to bring something that in 20 some years of ministry, I've never heard anybody ask me ever, ever, ever. And I have done so many interviews, like countless. So probably thousands of interviews. No, never rioting when I sang You're the Voice. That was not kind of the impact that we were going for. But, you know, there might have been some moshing at some point, you know, like down front at the shows, especially overseas or at a festival when we did that song. But no rioting, thank the Lord.
Yet. All right, the new worship project is called Dawn. The new song is called Battle is the Lord's, which you sound phenomenal once again on. Congratulations.
Thank you, my friend.
Leave me with a word of encouragement and we'll wrap it up.
You know, you brought up that song, and I feel like for me, that song has been timely in its message. I mean, the verse says, "Why so heavy, oh my soul, did you forget who's in control?" And that has challenged me over and over and over again. We have been working on this new album for a year and a half. There's actually four more songs that will complete the album probably early next year. But the EP of the six songs, you know, is shortly out and available. And so there's been so many times in this process where I've needed to hear those words of like, the battle is the Lord's. Like, he's gone before me. He's called me to do this, and he will give everything that is needed, and I can rest in him. And the part that probably gets me the most outside of the beginning of that song that challenges me is here now, your presence here now, fear has to leave now. For me, I love that line, fear has to leave now. It just can't be here when I worship God. And so I hope that and pray that that song is being an encouragement to people right now. You know, I'm very thankful to all the stations that are playing it and getting that message out there, because I just think, especially with 2020 being such a hard and challenging year, I think we all need to be encouraged that the battle is the Lord's and we can trust in him. We don't have to fear, and our hearts don't have to be heavy because he is going before us and he's fighting these battles for us.
Why so heavy, oh my soul? Did you forget who's in control? If he calls the winds and waves to still, he holds you now and always will. The battle is the Lord's. Take courage in the fight. The weapons of this war.
Corey, thanks for your support of this song too. It just means a lot to me personally. Yeah, just thanks for your support of our whole family. We really love and appreciate you. And Dad is just, as you know, one of your biggest fans.
As I he.
Thanks for listening to What Else with Corey Mann. Production elements and voiceovers by audiblegenesis.com. Engineered by Phil Souza. Executive producer is Danae Hughes. In partnership with the Studio DNA Podcast Network. Interested in your own podcast? Contact Danae@studiodna.media. What else? Previous podcast episodes and interviews available on iTunes, Spotify, and Spreaker.com. Hit subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Leave a review too. Find complete podcast tools and production at audiblegenesis.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.